got gut issues? Because Emma and I sure do. I have an issue with high sugar foods and anything with added preservatives, and Emma has a whole ass gluten intolerance. So we struggle with finding tasty treats, but thank the heavens for Abinola, because it has been a lifesaver when we want a sweet treat fix without all the gut bombs that high gluten foods like cookies and cakes give us.
Abinola has a chocolate granola that is made with lupini beans, so it's gluten-free and only has 1 gram of sugar, leaving our sweet tooth satisfied and our tummies feeling perfectly fine.
You guys, you can head over to abby-foods.com or the Instagram account at abby_foods_co for your granola fix turned tasty treat fix. You'll also find all kinds of recipes to try out, so you'll never get bored with Abinola. Use code PILOTSPANDEMIC for 15% off your order of Abinola.
Hey, my name's Emma.
Hey, my name's Maddie.
And you're listening to the Pilots Pandemic.
Hey, y'all. Welcome back to this week's episode of the Pilots Pandemic podcast. You're here with your host, Emma, and our lovely co-host, Maddie.
Hello, everyone.
And this week, we are joined by a guest, Cody Jackson. Cody, thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, thank you for having me on.
Yeah, so Cody, you are a private pilot and a truck driver. One, we absolutely love aviation, and two, I love transportation, especially when it comes to big trucks. So I'm stoked to be able to talk to you today, but I'll let Maddie take us in for the first question.
Yeah. So, as Emma said, we know Cody, like you have a big passion for transportation. And we wanted to kind of speak about your aviation journey today, as well as the loss of your friend, Lando, who is also a pilot. We connected with you through Facebook Messenger. I was so glad that you answered my message. I didn't know, like, sending it to you, if you would reach out or not. But I had heard about your friend Lando from another one of our guests, Zach Riesing, who we just recorded with last week. But he was like, yeah, reach out to Cody. He wants to talk about Lando. So I'm just grateful that you're going to share about him as well as your passion for aviation with us. But we always start out with, how did you get into flying? Was it like a person that sparked your interest, or was this like a childhood dream that you had? Just expand on that.
Little of both. It was a dream of mine. So basically, I got addicted. My father, he's a private pilot back in the early 90s, mid 90s. He flew. And he actually stopped flying when their friends got killed in a crash in Jerseyville, Illinois, back in the day. They were overweight and hot day, and they stalled, and a husband and wife got killed. And so my mom wouldn't let any of us fly. So my dad got into simulators. And this is, late 90s, early 2000 technology. Nothing real fancy. Well, I got hooked on, flying simulators as a little kid. And I always said, I want to fly. It's just something I fell in love with. And I used to pretend on a computer program called ProPilot that I was flying, the baseball teams around and stuff. It, just using my imagination as a kid. And I fell so in love with the idea of flying and stuff like that. And so then I actually started, taking it more serious. And, I had a plan going through high school of I wanted to be a commercial pilot. That was my plan all 4 years of high school. I said I wanted to either fly for the military or I wanted to be an airline pilot. And I had a whole plan of it. I was going to go to Embry-Riddle in Daytona Beach, Florida. That was kind of the whole game plan all 4 years. And then I became a dad at 18. Well, priorities changed, life happens, stuff like that. So, unfortunately, my aviation career took the back burner, and then I ended up getting into trucking, which I have been doing trucking for the past 8 years. Well, in 2020, I found an opportunity with a flight school that I had reached out to and said I would like to, help do janitorial services, clean the planes and stuff. In exchange, I wanted to learn how to fly. Well, and it unfortunately it did not work out how we had hoped, but it renewed and sparked that interest again. Well, fast forward to 2021, I had actually called the wrong EAA chapter. I was trying to get a hold of a local chapter, and Bethalto, Illinois, and I accidentally called EAA 64, which is now my home chapter. And talking to the vice president, I had found out that there was a nonprofit in Millstead, Illinois, that the president ran. It was a 1965-172 Cessna, and it was very cheap. It was only $100 an hour tack time, and that sparked that interest of, hey, maybe now I can do it, because aviation is such an expensive hobby, or expensive training in general. And I told myself, you know, now's the time to actually go after your dream. And it took me a while. It took me over a year to get my license because of the finances. But in April 19th of 2022, I finally got my license. And
congratulations.
That was the first step.
And that's awesome.
Now I'm working on my instrument. I'm up to just over 102 hours total. Haven't been doing a whole lot of flying this year due to some personal stuff, but my goal is to, I gave myself a 5-year goal to be to the airlines. Fortunately, I think I'm going to have to push that goal out, but you know, life happens. As long as we get to the end of the journey, that's all that matters.
Definitely. Yeah. I really think that you showed that, like, even after having your kid at 19, like, that's a big deal. You still like kept on track, and even though it's a little bit later than you wanted it to be, like, you now have your PPL, and I'm sure you'll get to that goal of the airlines because you have that like tenacity to do so.
Slow and steady.
Yep. Slow and steady wins the race.
For sure. I know we can definitely resonate with that. We were just talking about it in one of our most recent solos. Like, everyone's journey is so different, but to stick with it and to keep on, you know, trying and persevering, that's the real win. And that's what we should all be focused on. So I love your journey, but I kind of want to ask you, like, it might sound silly when we're talking about aviation, but like I said, trucks, like, I love transportation. I love semi trucks. I don't know what it is. It's like, I've always loved trains, trucks, planes ever since I was a little girl. But my boyfriend also kind of works in that field. He does logistics. So I wanted to ask you, are there any parallels between driving a semi and flying? And do you feel safer when you're flying or when you're driving? Which I probably know the answer to that one, but I want to hear what you have to say.
There can be minor parallels, you know, where things happen. You know, a lot of people get mad at like airlines and stuff when, you know, planes break and stuff. You know, trucking stuff happens, plans change daily. Just kind of like aviation, you never know what to expect. You can go into it with a whole game plan, and it can completely go to the wayside 5 minutes later. So, I mean, logistically, it's not, there's some parallels to it, not a lot. I will say it's a lot of monotony and boring, just like if you're flying a commercial pilot. Once you're in the air and you're cruising, it's boring, just kind of like trucking. Once you get going, you're on that same road for 400 plus miles so you get to your destination. So just kind of keeping yourself engaged would be pretty similar in my opinion.
Yeah. Do you think, like, I would assume that driving the semi, it's obviously like so much more hands-on because you don't have autopilot or anything like that. Like, I can imagine it gets really exhausting.
I'll be honest, after you've done this for so long, you honestly kind of get into like an autopilot and state of mind where you're just kind of driving, and you're just, it's not so taxing on you because you're just kind of in the zone, I guess you could say. It's hard to explain, but like, if you've ever been driving, you know, long distance, you're like, oh, I'm already halfway there. That's kind of how you get after, you know, a while in this industry. You get,
I do that,
sit in your groove.
I do that a lot. And then I'll forget, like, oh, was that light green? I've seen like memes about that on the internet, but it is so true. I like, if I'm driving really long distances, I will like kind of I'm paying attention, but you almost zone out a little bit. And then you're like, wait, dang, I've been driving for a while. So do you feel safer when you're flying or when you're driving?
Honestly, probably flying. Because while I've had a couple close calls in flying and stuff, cars do not pay any attention to us. They're in a hurry to get to their destination. They will cut you off and they will almost wreck you every day.
Yeah. Oh my God. That's scary.
That's intense.
Honestly, I would say I'd feel safer flying than I would be driving a semi.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Surprised. Yeah. I just wanted that like question to be answered because there's so many people out there who are so afraid to fly in like a small plane. They feel safer in an airliner, which is fine. I understand. But I think it's just interesting. Like people get on the road in their car every day and it's much more dangerous than flying in a small plane. So
I look at it this way. Death can happen at any time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Go for the enjoy the ride.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the views are a little better from the plane than the semi truck.
Oh yeah, without a doubt.
Yeah. But no, I just I think it's just interesting, like our fears and what we think about versus what we don't think about. With a plane, there's a lot more forgiveness because you know you got a lot more space up there than when you're driving down the highway. But the next question I kind of want to ask you is, what types of hardships have you faced along your journey to your private pilot license? I know you had like a deferment in like the amount of time that you wanted to get it, but were there any
biggest
other
thing, issues? The number one factor, and that honestly probably the number one factor from a lot of student pilots, is the cost. Mm-hmm. Between costs, you know, breakdowns, availability, weather. I mean, nobody wants to cancel their flight because of weather, but it happens. Same with breakdowns. The cost of it's the big factor because while a lot of these airlines are paying, you know, record pay, a lot of people like me, we can barely afford the cost of living, let alone the extra cost to afford the flight training and flying. I mean, it's a sacrifice. It really boils down to how bad do you want it, you know?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, any way you cut it, I don't know very many people who can just like pay out of pocket for training. I mean, even right now, I'm
honestly,
just
if it would not have been for that if it would have been for that nonprofit, I would have never got my license. The standard going rate around St. Louis right now, because I'm a bigger guy, I'm 6'1", 310, so I have to have a 172. Mm-hmm. The going rate around St. Louis right now is about 150 to 180 an hour. That's just for the plane. So you're looking at 220, 240 an hour.
Yep, that's about what it is in Washington, too. I think where I live, it's actually the cheapest, which is about the same as what you're quoting. But if I go south towards Seattle, the price increases to about like $350, I think. So it's pretty insane.
Yeah, it's expensive. And that's why I said a lot. People talk about the shortages, but people my age, we just, what's more important? You know, housing, rent. I mean, when everything's
all your basic needs,
5 years.
Yeah,
it's you got to pick and choose.
So we kind of wanted to dig into your friend Lando's story. So how did your guys' path cross, and where did you meet, and did you fly together?
So actually, funny enough, I met him because a acquaintance that I had met on Facebook. He was starting up a flight school at what's the name of that airport? It 1HO Creve Coeur there in St. Louis. He had just opened up a school and I was going to check it out and he wasn't there. Well, Lando seen me walking around, you know, looking lost, and he goes, "Hey, can I help you?" And I told him I was looking for my buddy Greg and said I was interested in checking out the flight school there. And he goes, "Oh yeah, well," he actually knew Greg. And so we kind of got to talking, you know, about that and flying. He told me, yeah, he used to have he never got his license. He had his hours in, and his flight instructor had passed away, and his logbook had basically gotten destroyed in a flood. And so he had to restart all of his hours and stuff. And so he actually, he was kind of like me. We did whatever we could to, you know, spend time around the flight school. And he I kind of bonded over that. And we only got to fly one time together. And I took him and his son. We went to Festus, Missouri, Paducah, Kentucky, Marion, Illinois, Mount Vernon, Illinois, and then back. And that was unfortunately the only time we got to fly together before his passing.
Yeah. I can't even imagine what it would feel like to lose your logbook. Like, that is one of my worst fears. It's something that is constantly lingering in the back of my mind. Like, whenever I leave town or anything like that, I literally tell my boyfriend, I'm like, there's two things that you need to get in case of an emergency. My blackjack, which is my stuffy, my horse stuffy that I've had since I was a child, like my Banky, and my logbook. Though that is it. And my logbook stays with like all of my most important documents, because it is just, it's always been a worst fear of mine. And so for somebody to have to go through that, oh, I can't even imagine. That's just such an unfortunate situation. But there was kind of a series of events that led to Lando's passing. So what else was he dealing with at the time?
Well, I know he was kind of struggling with work. He did, his main job during the day was installing cable and internet around St. Louis. So I know he had his hands full with that, and he'd actually had just started flight training again. He was working with a flight school called Piston Aviation, which is a fairly new school here in St. Louis. And he was helping them do IT stuff. In exchange, they were training him, and he was actually, you know, really happy about, you know, getting back in the air, getting his hours and stuff. And then he ended up having, out of nowhere, he had marital issues, and his wife ended up wanting to file for divorce. And he took it really hard. And unfortunately, I blame myself that I didn't do enough, because I seen the signs that he was heading down a bad path. He had actually reached out to me the day that they separated, and he sent me a text saying, thank you for being a good friend. And I knew what that meant. I had been there myself. And so I blew his phone up that night trying to talk to him, and he had kind of told me some details about it, what had happened. And so I kept checking in with him every day. I was like, hey, how you doing? How you holding up? You know, checking on his mental state. Because he had three or four kids, you know, to depend on. Well, after about 2 weeks, I was kind of hoping things were going to get better. I was actually in the process of moving, so, you know, my priorities were different. And I had spoke to him the day that he committed suicide. I was actually supposed to went to his house and picked up some stuff, and I ended up just not running out of time. And I guess he had made the decision a few days prior. And from what I can gather, he had told his oldest that he was planning on it, but his oldest didn't think he was being serious. And I know the day that I had talked with him, he seemed really down in the dumps, depressed. And I told him, I said, hey, hang in there. I've been there. I'm divorced myself. And I was like, it gets better. I said, I promise you it gets better. And I had even offered, let me get moved into this house and I will let you come live with me, you know, buddy system. Well, I honestly hadn't heard from him in about 2 weeks. It, truthfully, it was my fault for not following up, because I was so busy in my own life that I was like, he'll reach out when he's ready to talk. Well, I got a phone call about 2-3 weeks after that last time I talked with him. And unfortunately, I answered the phone like I typically do when I hadn't heard from somebody in a while. I said, you alive, brother? I ain't heard from you in a while. And his wife was on the other end of the phone. And I instantly, something told me he had done something stupid. And I said, don't tell me. And she broke down in tears and said, yeah. He had done it a few hours after I had spoke to him last. She went to leave the house, and he looked at her and his best friend and said, I can't do this anymore. Pulled a pistol out that nobody knew he had and ended his life. And I wish I could have just told him, like, hey, it would have been all right, you know. I think he had just made up his mind that life wasn't worth living, and I don't think anybody truthfully could have pulled him back from that unless he wanted it himself. I think he had pretty much made up his mind that he was just, he wanted to move on. And he went from a guy, you know, that was colorful, excited to live life. We were always talking about flight simulators and flying and how training was going and stuff. We talked every few days, and it's like, I'm not going to lie, it was a shock when I found out that he had actually went through with it. And I hate it. But at the end of the day, you know, life goes on. We just have to learn from that sacrifice of what we can do better for mental health.
Yeah. I'm so sorry for your loss. And thank you for wanting to come on here and be vulnerable with us. I know it's not easy to rehash this.
Yeah, I'm just grateful that you're here to share about Lando, because oftentimes these things happen. No one gets to share about their friend or family member, loved one, you know, partner. It just, you know, people know that this happens, but the stories and the vulnerabilities are what helps make change. And so I kind of wanted to get your perspective on just the struggle with like not being able to say how you actually feel as a pilot, like the weight of maintaining a clean bill of health. Do you think like Lando was up against that struggle? And how do you kind of personally feel about that?
When it comes to Lando, honestly, I think when it came to mental health, he wasn't so much as worried about his license as he was in general, like, someone like me and you would. But in general, you know, we kind of joke about aviation. We're not allowed to be sad. And unfortunately, it's a really bad way to look at things. And in today's world where, you know, there's more mental health awareness and everybody's more aware of, you know, how our mental health impacts us in our daily lives. In aviation, we're still set in the 50s and 60s. Where you have to be the macho person. You're not allowed to have emotions. And unfortunately, you know, rules are written in blood in this industry and stuff. So it's a double-edged sword. I get why the rules are there, but there has to be a better way for us to handle it. Even for a lot of these general aviation guys that, you know, are never going to make it to flight deck of a, you know, 737. I feel like they should be able to have more access to, you know, therapy and stuff than, you know, some of the airlines. I get why it's more stringent. You're taking passengers, their lives are in your hands. And in the case of, you know, German wings and such, I get why the rule is there. But there needs to be some form of where we can have access to some type of therapy, mental health, medication, you know. I'm not sure what can be done. In aviation, you got to be perfect, clean bill of health, and you're not allowed to be sick, or God forbid, you could lose everything that you've worked for. And just one thing can cause you to lose everything.
Yeah, I think
it really sucks.
It's definitely a constant worry, not only just for airline pilots. I feel like if you're in the GA world, this is a true passion for you. You love to fly. Airline pilots, I obviously they have a passion for it, but that losing their license is based in like, wow, this is my career. And I literally just had this conversation with my CFI yesterday because he was talking about getting his blood pressure taken and it was a little bit high and his AME wasn't too worried about it, but it scared him. He was like, why is my blood pressure high? He's only in his 40s. And so he's like, I immediately went home and checked my blood pressure with my own blood pressure cuff and it was fine. So he was like, it really scared me. And I was like, maybe your heart rate was just up pretty high. Like you were nervous while you were in there. He's like, are you talking about white coat syndrome? I was like, yeah. And he's like, I just heard that term. And he's like, I think I have it. I'm like, I'm sure you do. He's like, it's just, you know, this is the career I want to have. And so everything weighs on my medical. And I'm like, tell me about it, dude. This is what I talk to pilots every day about. Like, I totally get it. So, I mean, it's everywhere. I think every pilot who holds their medical, you know, it's scary to know, like, you could lose it anytime. Any day. So
and I'm very fortunate with me. My AME is also my primary doctor. So anytime I have issues or something or questions, I can straight refer to her and say, hey, well, what do you think about this? Or what can I do about, you know, my blood pressure getting up a little bit or something like that? Hey, what can I change? Like me, I got to renew my card here soon. I think in the next 6 months, I got to renew mine. And I can ask her, hey, what steps do I need to take to get certain stuff within range for when that time comes, you know?
Yeah. I know. For me, I'm like, I'm so used to the whole white coat thing that I don't even tell them. I don't have to tell them anymore. When I go in and they put the little like pulse thing on your finger and they put the blood pressure cuff on, immediately they're like, do you not like the doctor? Like, are you afraid of the doctor's office? I'm like, mm-hmm. And they're like,
okay. I
had to
get my blood pressure yesterday and they felt like they were going to take my arm off.
I know. Well, honestly, I'm gonna be so real with you. It kind of hurts getting your blood pressure taken. Like when that cuff starts really squeezing down on you, it hurts. It's not comfortable. The whole experience, like having your blood drawn, getting your finger pricked, like who really does like the doctor? Like,
unfortunately, I got used to that. My ex was a medical assistant, and when she was in school, having to learn how to do that, I was the guinea pig. So unfortunately, I learned she'd have to do, you know, pump it up. She had to do it manually, you know, with the stethoscope, pump it up. So unfortunately, I was on the receiving end of. So I've gotten used to it. It doesn't really bother me anymore. Just be calm. Don't try to get anxiety from it, or it will screw up your blood pressure.
Yeah. I know it really does. And it also takes like the right person. Like if you have a really good nurse, I know that when I've gone in to get my blood drawn, like all it could take is just a really nice older woman looking at me and saying, baby, it's going to be okay. It's going to be over. And literally when she says it's going to be over, it's like, it's already done and over. And like, all you need sometimes is like a warm touch and a nice person. That's the one thing that like I love about the medical field in general. I feel like a lot of people who get into that line of work really do care about taking care of people and making sure that they're comfortable. But anyways, that's a whole other subject for another time. But I did want to ask you, kind of going back to a somber note, how has Lando's death affected you personally? I know it has probably brought up a series of emotions for you.
Honestly, in the moment, the day I found out, I was really, you know, devastated. Because I was probably one of the last friends that he spoke to. And I beat myself up because I feel like maybe, well, there's a lot of what ifs. What if I would have made the attempt and actually went over to his house that day to pick up the stuff for the move? And what if I would have sat and, you know, talked with him for a little bit? Could I have been the difference maker? And you can't blame yourself. You can't think like that. But there's a lot of what ifs. Honestly, it just kind of shows you, hey, you got to try to keep pushing forward. I myself have been to that point a couple times. And, you know, you got to remind yourself, hey, you have people that do care about you. No matter how hard life gets, you got to keep pushing.
Yeah. I think that's great advice. I think all of us, like, not only with, you know, your friend that committed suicide, but, like, anyone that dies that's close to you really reminds you, like, how important life is and to really, like, you know, take into account the small moments. Like, not everything's about progressing and having these big aha moments. It's more about, like, the small things that you do with the people that you love. So I'm glad you pointed that out. And I know that you knew Lando was struggling. I think a lot of people with their friends or their family who do lose their lives to suicide, they tend to be like, wow, there was no sign. Like, I couldn't tell that this person was that depressed, or that they were going to do that. But with Lando, you knew that he was not in the best mindset. And
I knew he was to that point. I just didn't think he was honest, because I've been to that point myself a few times. Yeah. Where I was just, you know, done with life. I felt like there was no way out, no escape. And, you know, you just got to keep pushing forward. I honestly thought, hey, while he's, as long as you're there for him, you know, keep trying to befriend him, maybe he'll pull himself out of it. Like with me, I got to a really dark point in 2019 where I actually tried to commit. And I, in the heat of the moment, my finger was on the trigger, and I, something told me, don't go through with it. Your life matters. I threw the gun across the house, went out to the house, and look at me now. Four or five years later, I've achieved things I never dreamed were possible in that moment. And that's why I was trying to explain to Lando when he was like that. I said, listen, I've been in them exact shoes that you're in. And I said, while it looks like there's no out, I said, there's still, you don't know what lies ahead.
I think that you having those personal experiences, you're able to know that the signs. So if we were someone who's like never experienced this, because I think that's the disconnect, is if you've never been in that place, it's really difficult to see someone progress into depression or anxiety or even suicidal ideation. So like, what would you tell our audience, like, you know, to pay attention to with their friends or their family members, so that they can kind of provide those, I guess like a foundation of support for them if they needed to.
The biggest telltale signs would be pulling away from everybody, desocializing, you know, kind of stick it to yourself, antisocial behavior. Honestly, just the tone of their voice. And well, I've known people that have unfortunately committed suicide and they've hit it really well, their depression, you know. Even if you think that they may be sad, just that one, like, hey, you doing all right? Or just that one time, well-timed connection could be the difference in that person's life of, you know, what's going to happen. You know, just saying, hey, man, you doing all right? You want to go do something? You know, sometimes they feel like they're all alone. In reality, they're not alone. They just don't realize or know any better. Honestly, just their attitude, the way they're handling themselves, you don't know. That's the best way to put it, is just be their friend and try to, you know, support them. And if you think they're that depressed, just be all right and talk to them, you know, show them that somebody out there cares. Because in the darkest moments, you don't think anybody's in your corner, and you may have a bunch of people in your corner not know it.
Yeah. Yeah, it really does take, all it takes is one conversation or one person to really make that difference. But thank you again so much, Cody, for joining us today. And again, being so vulnerable and having the courage to share this story. I know like these things are not easy to talk about. For some reason, I can always speak about my dad's passing. And I can get through it. But when I start to talk about my uncle who took his own life, I don't know what it is about the emotion. It makes me very sad. So I respect and appreciate you a lot for sharing his story today. I know it's not easy, and it could be 5 years, 6 years, 10 years. It's still, you still always mourn the death of a friend or loved one. So thank you again for being vulnerable today.
Thank you.
But we are going to, like we always do at the end of each show, we like to leave it on a positive note. So I'll let Maddie take controls and ask us these fun questions so that we can get to know you a little bit better.
I left them for you because I was like, Emma's going to want to ask fun questions today. But I'll do it. I framed all these questions around Cody and your truck driving. Like I was like, what questions can I ask a semi-truck driver? So what is like the nastiest roadkill you've ever seen?
Honestly, a cow. I do know somebody that hit a moose.
Ooh.
And tore his truck up really bad. I've been fortunate enough. I think the worst thing I've hit is like a possum. I think I've hit an armadillo before. I've been fortunate. I've never hit anything. Now watch me go home Friday and I'll hit a deer on the way home.
Hey, you better knock on wood, say your prayers before you go. Like, we don't want to jinx you.
All right. Well, Maddie, I want to ask you, because you're like in the Pacific Northwest, which has like big.
There's a lot of animals, but it's mostly dead deer that we see. And I want like nastiest roadkill. I don't know. It's typically the smaller animals because it's like they're all splayed out over the ground. The deer, you're just like their necks like bent the wrong way, you know. And but it's always sad when I see a baby deer. The other, like, God, I think this was last year when this happened. There was a baby deer and a mama deer. I had just went walking on the trail and I saw them. I'm like, oh my God, so cute. And I get in my car like an hour later. I'm driving down by the railroad tracks and I see this cop and he's shooting a baby deer. And I was like, that was just the freaking deer I saw. Someone had hit it, so he had to kill it to put it out of its misery. But I swear to God, that happens all the time. Even yesterday, luckily no one hit the baby deer, but they're always crossing the road around here. Like, they'll just be sitting there standing in the middle of it. So it's mostly dead deer on the road or like really small animals. Like, I can't even think. But yeah, I haven't seen like super nasty roadkill. It wouldn't even compare to a dead cow.
Yeah, that's what we get around here a lot, and like where I'm from is dead deer. And I was in the truck with my boyfriend one time, and we were back on a country road, and of course a deer just like it didn't even run out in front of us. It just ran smack dab into like the driver's side like rear tire, and we knew it hit us because I mean it was like thunk. And of course we pull over, and the deer like died instantly, but its body was, I mean, TMI, but like it was like completely torn in half. It was the most graphic. And like, I have grown up hunting. I have helped my father skin many a deer. There's just something about that scene that is just not fun. I did one time, a deer ran into me the same way, and I was in a side by side, and that was pretty interesting. Although I think it did survive. I'm not sure. It did like limp off, but it ran. So I don't know. Rest in peace to that deer.
Actually reminds me, what was it, a couple of years ago, a driver had a turkey go through the windshield, and it was actually alive. It was like walking around in the guy's sleeper. And there's actually a video. It went kind of viral. The guy got the turkey out of the semi and got it, basically shoot it out of the truck. It walked into the left lane of the highway and got hit by a car.
Oh my God.
It wanted to die that day.
Yeah.
It was like, I'm done.
Yeah. Oh my God, dude. Turkeys are nuts. Let's not get me started on turkeys, because I've been having like a lot of interactions with turkeys recently, and yes, they are literally dinosaurs. But God, they're like a very tough bird. Anyways, all right, I'll ask the next question. So Cody, best gas station food, and I'm really curious what your answer is going to be.
I'm not going to lie, I'm addicted to Love's truck stop hot dogs. They're jalapeno cheddar, my go-to.
Ooh, you're speaking my language. So I love good. What do they call them? It's like a tornado or like a or something, and they're always like the most random things, and sometimes they don't even have like the other day I got one. It's my sick pleasure. I don't know what's wrong with me. I always get them and they tear my stomach to bits, but it didn't even have like a card that said like what the flavor was, but I was just rolling with it, you know what I mean? I'm like, I love the gamble of it all. It's like a surprise. But yeah, that's my favorite.
What sucks is we have, it's not a truck stop, it's a gas station. Unfortunately, we're no longer allowed to go to the one in Pontiac. It's kind of like Bucky's. They are very anti truck driver. They don't want us on their properties, unfortunately. But Wally's is one we have here in the Midwest, and it's got so good food. It's basically a knockoff Bucky's, but they have like in there and you can get like a brisket Gouda sandwich.
Ooh.
And you can get like beef jerky and freshly made potato chips. So good.
Ooh. See, now it's so funny you said that about Bucky's, because Maddie and I just went to Bucky's on our way back from Sun and Fun. And the first thing I said when we pulled in, when they have that it's the semi truck and it's like, no, and like, you're not allowed. I was like, you know what? That's fucked. Like, that is really messed up.
Oh, they are very anti. Even if you go in with no trailer, just your truck, they will boot you, tow you.
What's the issue though? Like, why won't they let truck drivers come in? Because I didn't even realize that.
I mean, probably just they don't want the look. A lot of people have this stigma. Like, if it wasn't for us, a lot of people would have nothing, but yet they hate us at the same time. You know, and I laugh. A couple years ago, there was a truck stop. I want to say in Illinois that was being discussed, and the town folk said they didn't want it because they didn't want prostitutes, drugs, loud trucks in their neighborhood. I'm like, what is this? The 1970s?
Yeah, literally.
I'm like, none of this happens. The other day about the Greyhound bus accident, it was all over the national news. Three people got killed on a Greyhound bus. It actually happened about 15 minutes from my house. And I've seen all these comments of blaming the truck drivers. The truckers were parked in a rest area on the shoulder into the rest area because of how full it was. And people were blaming the truck drivers. Mm-hmm. I'm like, they were in their bunks sleeping.
Yeah.
Jesus. I'm like, why do you got to blame us?
Yeah, that's messed up, dude. Like, yeah, I don't appreciate that because, like, in your industry, it's some of the hardest working people. And also, a lot of these folks have to make a huge sacrifice. Not only is it's dangerous, you're spending time away from your family. And I don't know. I have a lot of respect for it. Let's move on because I literally sound like... I'm fangirling over the transportation industry, but I don't know why. I just love it. Like, it is so cool to me, and it's something that I respect a lot. But anyways, all right. Wait, Maddie, did you answer best what your gas station food is?
Well, we were talking about Buc-ee's, and I was like, I'm literally wearing my Buc-ee's shirt right now. I do, even though they're not nice to truck drivers, I love Buc-ee's because it's just like so overwhelming. There's so many things to choose from. When Emma and I went, Emma was not a fan of all of the things going on, but I was like, I could get like a pulled pork sandwich here. Like, you can't get that anywhere. It doesn't have the best food, but it's just nice to have so many options. You just like, whoa, there's just everything there. So you don't have them here on the West Coast. I am actually going to go to Dallas, not this weekend, but next weekend. And that's like one of our main things that we're going to go do is go to a Buc-ee's because we just love that shit.
It's like a TJ Maxx, like Tuesday morning inside of a gas station with also like a mediocre restaurant and really nice bathrooms. It's
like the bathrooms. It's the bathrooms for me.
Yeah, it really is. I love the privacy. The privacy is amazing. All right. So, Cody, last question. Best and worst drivers in the United States.
I'd honestly have to say the Northeast in general sucks. But I would honestly have to say the worst drivers would be between Chicago and Atlanta.
Heard the man.
Atlanta's the only city I know that takes 3 hours to go from one end of the city to the other.
Jesus. I feel, yeah. Atlanta is got some of the worst traffic known to like mankind. Outside of, I feel like, Los Angeles or something. They have terrible traffic.
I've never been out there, so unfortunately I can't say. Out of all the states, I've been in 38 states. I haven't done really much of the West Coast. So unfortunately, I go through Chicago, though, every other day. So I'm used to the misery.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. ArmorAll, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
Honestly, if I had to choose, as much as I'm from St. Louis. People give us St. Louis drivers crap. We're probably one of the tamer ones out there. As long as you go with the flow of traffic, you're not going to get hurt. You're gonna have no problems.
Yeah.
Like, everybody gripes about St. Louis traffic, and I'm like, that's nothing compared to Indianapolis, New York, Chicago. I'm like, St. Louis traffic's nothing.
Yeah. Is St. Louis or Missouri the show me state?
Yeah.
Okay. I was like, I freaking love St. Louis for that. Anyways, I have been to all 50 states. My husband drove in Chicago. I thought that was great, like nasty driving too, like not good. But I will say West Coast drivers are pretty fucking bad. Like, we just don't pay attention to the rules. Like, a lot of people, which this could happen everywhere, I just don't know for sure, but West Coast drivers, specifically Washington, California, love to camp in the left lane and won't fucking move for anyone. Even if you come up right on their ass, they're like, you go around me in the right lane.
Jesus.
The biggest problem with us is people are in such a hurry. They do not care. And I laugh every time I'll bring a friend with me, and they're just shocked at how people drive around us. Heck, back Black Friday last year, I took my mother with me to Chicago. On the way back, we were almost involved in a head-on collision because some guy got impatient and tried to pass me on a two-lane road and was sitting on his phone, not paying attention. I even hit my air horn, I mean, flashing my lights, and I looked at my mom, and I said, we're about to see somebody die. I slammed on the brakes, and about at the last second, the guy realized it and got over.
Oh, my God.
I mean, people will cut us off. I mean, they'll brake check us. They're in such a hurry. These guys like us, you know, we kind of just go with the flow, so we're not in that big a hurry. But people will drive like idiots around us, not realizing we will kill them in an instant if we hit them.
I know, like, people really don't respect y'all on the road. It is the tomfoolery that I've witnessed.
I was going to say Canadian truck drivers also love to camp in the left lane, and they're technically not allowed to be in the left lane in Washington state. So they kind of do get a bad rap here because people are so pissed all the time, but it's always a Canadian truck driver. It's never a US one.
Ontario plates seem to be some of the worst.
Ontario? Ours are all from
Ontario,
BC.
Canadian guys, they'll come in over from like Michigan, and they'll run a load in the States, and how they're some of the worst truck drivers.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
All right, well, we will wrap up this week's episode. Cody, it has been a blast talking to you. Thank you again so much for joining us.
No problem. Anytime, if you ever want me back on, just let me know.
Yeah, well... Thank you. I know Maddie and I both did as well. And, you know, stay safe on the road, stay safe in the air. But thank you again.